by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Sabres Live continues. Two in the NHL tonight. Florida, Boston, Dallas, Colorado. Obviously, the Panthers and the Stars are in positions to move on, as do we here on the show. It's Sabres Live on a Friday. That means Shayna Goldman from The Athletic. Hi, Shayna. I hope you like my hat choice today.
It's the best. I love it. I'm glad you finally received it.
Thank you.
It has a little Star Wars feel to it, right? The way that the letters are written.
The
letters are coming in. It's almost like it's going into the... the intro when it moves up on the screen.
I love also it. Makes me question the ongoing evolution of the shape of my face with my advanced age. So, I've been kind of enjoying the style of hats that you're wearing, Marty. The flatter, wider brim tends to work a little better when your head gets bigger. So,
you know what, though? The hat that I feel like we all need to be jumping on is the corduroy trend coming back. I know it's not the perfect season, but we need too many men corduroy hats.
Love,
oh, my God, look at this. Yeah, love this.
See, you got the nice one.
See, you guys are jumping in on the NHL's trend of too many men everywhere and anywhere because there have been 16 too many men penalties.
Right?
I think it's 16 now. Gosh. Yeah. Well, I'm keeping track.
Yesterday, when Draisaitl brought the puck back into his own zone, which,
what a call.
Great job by the linesman to actually point, like, no, it was you. And he's pointing at him like, but at first I thought it was too many men, right? Because there's somebody getting off the bench.
Joshua.
I rewound it.
Yeah.
But Vancouver actually had four players on the ice for a little bit because they were so worried about
too few men.
Too many men, apparently, that they were like, too few men.
Not enough men in the podcast I never knew I needed. Oh, my God. A phrase you will never hear me say again. I give so much credit to the officiating, and like, I never give officiating credit, right? Like, I jump on it. I'm not as bad, I think, as some people being like, they're biased, they're this, they're that, because you hear that clamoring all postseason. But like, I am very critical of everyone and everything because that's what I do. But that was some great officiating there because that could have been, you would think, maybe a potential penalty for too many men. And then you also could think it might have been an offside call. Like, a ton of credit for that. See, and this is what the NHL could hang their hat on. Like, see, this is why we need human element. Like, that's it.
Well, you can guarantee that.
Would they want to talk to that linesman after the game to explain his good call? Because now they want to talk to the referees to explain their bad calls. But they won't ever do that because it's always a negative spin. But again, like, you got the Jordan Staal cross-checking penalty of Zibanejad. Like, is it a cross-check? Yeah, it's a little bit of a cross-check. Is it a penalty? I don't know. It's the playoffs. It's the third period. It's a battle,
nice,
right?
Nice makeup call, though.
Yeah, maybe it's a makeup call.
For that missed delay. Like, see, this is what I hate, though. I hate the makeup calls. Like, I get it.
Me too.
I hate it. In the playoffs, to me, that's not a penalty. But in the regular season, if you want to call it, I'd be like, whatever. But in the playoffs, probably not. But if you missed a call a few minutes before, that's your balancing the scales, right? Like, what are you going to do?
Well, they decided not to review puck over glass. They said, no, maybe next year. But this was a clear, like, we should have reviewed it and got the right call.
Yeah. All I know about the cross check is, like, Zach Benson probably would have got 2 and 10 on the play, right? Just for being
in a match and a three-game suspension. And Zach Benson wouldn't have been the one given the cross check. He would have been the one with the puck in the corner,
right?
But they still would have called him for it.
Right. Yeah. Illegal fall to the ice or something to that effect. Shayna, we'll have lots of time to talk about the Rangers moving forward because they're still going. What's your one hot take on what will happen in Carolina moving forward?
I think that I had one in my head and now. Okay, they're going to trade Marty Natchez. There we go. That is my hot take. I don't love that move for them, but it did feel like last year he had that breakout year, and he's a different player for them, right? He plays against the grain in Carolina, and they found a way to make that work. He can play to his strengths, and that's how it complements the Canes last year. And this year, that just didn't happen consistently enough. You could talk about usage with him. You could talk about the player needing to do more. It's a little bit of everything. It feels like he's a prime candidate to be shipped out to clear some cap space instead of extending him, because if I remember correctly, he's an RFA. So I understand they already gave him his bridge deal. So now's your moment to go for a little bit more. And understandably, the player might want to do that as well. I could see him being on the move.
But I think you were about to say move off of him in order to keep maybe some of the UFAs. Are there, because their list is long, is there a priority for you among their UFAs?
I mean, Jake Gensler is the best player they have. So, yeah, that should be priority number one, right? He's everything they needed more, and he was an outstanding fit there. So I think that is step one. I could see them walking from someone like Jesper Fast because, you know, you already have Martinook. You have players of that ilk, right? You need players who bring something different. That's the whole idea with the Canes. They lean into their identity year after year, and they do it so well, but you need to bring in something different to round out your group, and Gensel does that. So I think you have to make a couple sacrifices. And I think that they keep at least one of Pesce or Shea. I wonder if it's going to be Shea. I think they saw they could still be good with Shea. And Pesce, I think there's concerns with injuries with that shoulder, which I understand, but you can't lose both. As much as the Canes have a system where they can just interchange defensemen in and out, right? We've seen it for years. You look at Burns, D'Angelo, Hamilton, they just keep going. Whoever can play alongside Slavin. I don't think you can lose both of your second pair. I think you get to a point where you say, how much are you interchanging? That's going to hurt. And I think someone like Chatfield could probably step up in Pesci's place.
Has your cohort on Too Many Men, Allison, mentioned anything about the Seattle coaching situation? And therefore, now that the Canes are done, you know, and Brenda Moore is not, unless I've missed it, I don't believe he's technically signed a deal yet.
Not yet.
What's that?
Not yet.
Not yet. Hasn't
signed a deal yet.
Has she suggested anything about the coaching situation out there?
Nope, she's not. But you know, I'm waiting for the Rod Brindamore to the Leafs to heat up, because now that the Canes are done, everyone can start that narrative till they hire someone like Craig Berube, right? I can't see him going anywhere else. And I don't think the move, I know you have to do something different if you're the Canes. I don't think the move is getting rid of him, because the way they battle back in this series tells you exactly why he's such a great coach. But I would be so surprised if he went to Seattle.
Okay, you just mentioned Marty Natchez, and then it made me think, oh, Sabres. I mean, if the Carolina Hurricanes move away from what was a third-line right winger, and all of a sudden I'm looking at the Sabres and trying to, we talked yesterday about finding a third line, right? Like, first line, maybe it's Tuck, Thompson, and insert name here, and then you have Cousins with Quinn and Paterka, and then you have Benson that maybe is a third line, maybe he's up top, but how do you find that third line? What would Marty Natchez be asking for? This is a maybe 60-point player, 70 last year, 50-some this year. Is he a $6 million player? Is that what he would ask for on the market?
RFA
market. He's not a UFA, so you'd have to trade and then maybe arbitration or whatnot. But what number?
You know what? I think if he followed up his breakout year, six would be something a general manager would give. And that's the problem, right? He doesn't have much leverage, and they're going to use everything against him to keep that number down. I would guess more of like a 4.7, 5.4 range. That is what I'm coming up with right now. Someone can pull up his projections and tell me I'm wrong, but that is my vibe. I could see him getting like 3-4 years and not getting much to give himself another opportunity. And also, why would a team commit 7-8 years to a player right now, right? You do that for your core players, not your supporting cast. But I do like him as an option for the Sabres middle six, because at his best, he's a second liner, right? And at his worst, he could be a third liner. He's someone who plays the wing, but he also likes playing center. So to have a little bit of flexibility and versatility in your lineup is never a bad thing. You look at the Dallas Stars right now, right? What works for them? The fact that Wyatt Johnston can slot from wing to center. Someone like Logan Stankoven can move from wing to center. Jamie Benn can do it. Tyler Seguin can do it. You have so many options, and you're not like pigeonholed into just a couple roster moves. Mm-hmm. So to have a little bit extra right there, it's not a bad thing, especially because the Sabres are down to center that they had for most of the season.
AFP Analytics, for our buddy James Finch in Rochester, has Marty Natchez on a short-term deal at 3 years, $6.5 million.
Yeah, I could see that.
Which is $1 million over. And I get RFA has a little bit more of the, you know, the negotiating power in that situation. So maybe that's why that million is important.
Agreed. And I think the Canes, now that Shane and Marty was pointing out right off the top today, that it feels like next year, because cap friendly flipped their calendar today. So they got rid of all the contracts from 23-24, and we're on to 24-25. But there's obviously a lot of action to be played tonight. Road teams are still holding the edge overall in winning percentage in these playoffs. It's Florida at Boston for game six. It's Dallas at Colorado for game six. What are Shayna's storylines to watch for in both of these games tonight?
Well, I'm still waiting to see how many sips of water Brad Marchand took today. I gotta say, I love Paul Maurice. He's won me over. I have never been I was so critical of this man in Winnipeg, and I do not understand what he did there. I felt like he was toiling away for years. I give him a ton of credit because he felt so refreshed when he came to Florida, and it's everything they needed more. But this, the theater, I'm watching the coaching storylines. I am loving every bit of the coaching drama. Give it to me every day of the week. I'm watching for that. Obviously, we're watching to see if Brad Marchand's in the game, right? We need our Rat King matchup at least for one more game. I am watching to see how the Panthers, I would say, come out strong, right? Because we know that they're a good comeback team. We know that already. But we also know the Bruins are good at keeping these games pretty low scoring and kind of being opportunistic with less, right? Because they're not generating as much as Florida. Florida's been the better team through much of this postseason. So those are going to be a couple key elements. And for that game, too, I'm looking to someone like Aaron Ekblad, who you look at game one, he had a horrible game one. And it was so out of character for him. And then they really stabilized Forsling and Ekblad. And I feel like they're going to be a key to this game. If they can shut down the Bruins' best, you know, the Panthers' best is that much better. So that, I think, will be pretty important tonight.
Okay, so last game, we got the Paul Maurice yelling at his bench, trying to fire him up. And after the game, he says, I just thought they needed a little profanity in their life. And then you had the Jim Montgomery angry about the diving, and he did the old Soldier Boy like meme, right? So which one was the best social media kind of clip to click on? The Jim Montgomery Soldier Boy with the music added to it, or the Paul Maurice profanity comments post-game?
I would say probably the Montgomery. I think people were clinching on to that one a little bit more. And it's funny because ESPN didn't show that initially. Only Sportsnet did. So you only got the clip that way.
It's a pattern in these playoffs.
Yeah. I have many thoughts about the broadcasting in these playoffs. I could write a novel on that right now. For me personally, it's Paul Maurice, the profanities, because of course you guys know that's a little bit more my brand, but Montgomery was hysterical. Like, those are the theatrics I needed in a series. I need coaches to do more. Like, do you remember years ago, I remember with Philly specifically, Peter Laviolette, he used to chew his gum. He didn't spit it out. He took it with his hands and threw it.
Yeah.
He doesn't do it enough anymore. Mm. So I need more like that. And that diving gave it to me.
Nice. Dallas.
I remember when I was my first year in New York, Shayna and Duffer, I broke my collarbone trade deadline in 2011. So that was my 2010-2011 season. I missed the rest of the year. In the suite by the press box in the playoffs, I sat next to Chris Drury, who was also injured. And when calls didn't go our way, he would be like, look at Torts. And Torts would literally throw his old body into the glass, like behind the bench, like every time. And he would shake the first row. And I had never noticed it. And I sat on the bench all year and I never noticed it. And Drew would be like, look at Torts. And we grabbed the binoculars and watch him. Oh, and God, it was so funny. So yeah, I love a little coach theatrics like that.
I agree. I think the game is absolutely. I mean, just think of NFL for a second, or NBA for a second, where the proximity to the sidelines, right? And how visible coaches are, and how, I mean, my goodness, they literally run with the play at times.
Think of like Sean McVay, how he has the person whose job is literally to keep him from going on the field. Like, come on.
Yes. So I'm with you. Like, I think
I'm always good for a good baseball manager running onto the field and arguing with the umpire. Yes.
And I got a lot of that watching the Yankees, like Aaron Boone's pissed every other second.
Well, it was long before Aaron Boone when Billy Martin was the legend for it. So yeah. Oh my goodness. But what?
Didn't he get hired and fired in the same day?
Of course. It's the Billy Martin Yankee way. I mean, it was just, but that being said, I think if you're looking at the later game tonight, Dallas, Colorado, there's a lot to appreciate. Well, now we're tight for time. But in this coaching matchup as well, what is your storyline for tonight?
How the Stars manage without Rupe Hintz is a big one. I think that they figured out how to play him the right way in the series, because you can't, as much as he takes on top competition, if you completely bury him in the Nathan MacKinnon matchup, you are consequently burying Jason Robertson as well, which you can't do. So they've been figuring out how to manage that. And now you're without him. So obviously someone like Wyatt Johnson stepped up. We saw, I think Robertson's playing at a star caliber, but how are they going to, you know, go up against Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar, who finally stepped up and took over a game the way that the Avalanche need them to? Because that was something that was a little bit concerning to me. I wonder about Makar's injury status. I know it's the playoffs, everyone's hurt, but I think he finally had himself like that kind of game-breaking game last game. And I know that there's more of it. So if him and McKinnon are firing on all cylinders, I think this goes seven. But I think if you see them stumble at all, that the Stars have been taking advantage of it.
I was asked this yesterday, so I know my answer, but I will ask you, Kale McCarr or Miro Heiskanen, which one do you prefer?
Overall or this postseason?
Right now in this series.
Tonight?
In the series, it's okay. Overall, it's McCarr. In this series, it's Heiskanen. I think that we're seeing him look healthier. He looks a little bit better in all situations. And with McCarr, the scoring's there, but the play below the surface hasn't been to his elite level, and it's a very high bar to meet. But that's been the story with him all year, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Do you like the double drop power play breakout that leads to a 2-on-0 with Heiskanen scoring?
How many times does that not work? How many teams attempt that and it just doesn't work? It worked perfectly. And to me, that was potentially like your backbreaking moment of the game, especially if your Dallas dominated play for the minute before that. And that's how it ends up, is a delay of game penalty. I thought right there, if the Avs lost the series, this is the moment you're going to be thinking about all offseason.
Shayna uttered a phrase earlier in the segment that she will never utter again. I hope you didn't miss it, because Shayna's the best every week. Thanks, Shayna. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
We continue Sabres Live after this.